lived, it was going to hurt. If he lived, everything was going to hurt. His death self tugged at him. The sense of release, of relief, of rest felt like something precious being lost. Even while the chattering, busy, machine-like mind kept grinding, grinding, grinding forward, the soft, bruised center of Miller's soul urged him to pause, sit back down, let the problems go away. "What are we looking for?" Holden said. He'd stood up. A blood vessel in the man's left eye had given way, the white of the sclera turning a bright, meaty red. "What are we looking for?" the death self echoed. "They're going to fall back," Miller said, answering the first question. "We follow. Just outside the range so whoever's going last doesn't feel like he has to shoot us." "Isn't everyone going to do the same thing? I mean, once they're gone, isn't everyone in this place going to head in for the port?"
"I expect so," Miller said.
"So, let's try to slip in ahead of the rush. Look, there." It wasn't much. Just a change in the mercenaries' stance. A shift in their collective center of gravity. Miller coughed. It hurt more than it should have. "What are we looking for?" his death self asked again, its voice more insistent. "An answer? Justice? Another chance for the universe to kick us in the balls? What is through that archway that there isn't a faster, cleaner, less painful version of in the barrel of our gun?" The mercenary captain took a casual step back and strode down the exterior corridor and out of sight. Where he had been, Julie Mao sat, watching him go. She looked at Miller. She waved him on.
"Not yet," he said.
"When?" Holden said, his voice surprising Miller. Julie in his head flickered out, and he was back in the real world.
"It's coming," Miller said.
He should warn the guy. It was only fair. You got into a bad place, and at the very least you owed your partner the courtesy of letting him know. Miller cleared his throat. That hurt too.
"It's possible I may start hallucinating, or become suicidal. You might have to shoot me."
Holden glanced over at him. The pachinko machines lit them blue and green and shrieked in artificial delight.
"What?" Holden said. "Nothing. Getting my balance," Miller said.
Behind them, a woman shouted. Miller glanced back to see her pushing a vomit zombie away, a slick of brown goo already covering the live woman. At the archway, the mercenaries quietly stepped back and started down the corridor.
"Come on," Miller said.
He and Holden walked toward the archway, Miller pulling his hat on. Loud voices, screams, the low, liquid sound of people being violently ill. The air scrubbers were failing, the air taking on a deep, pungent odor like beef broth and acid. Miller felt like there was a stone in his shoe, but he was almost certain if he looked, there would be only a point of redness where his skin was starting to break down. No one shot at them. No one told them to stop. At the archway, Miller led Holden against the wall, then ducked his head around the corner. A quarter second was all it took to know the long, wide corridor was empty. The mercs were done here, and leaving Eros to its fate. The window was open. The way was clear.
"Last chance," he thought.
And he meant both the last chance to live and the last one to die.
"Miller?"
"Yeah,"
he said.
"It looks good. Come on, before everyone gets the idea."
Chapter 31. Holden. Something was moving in Holden's gut.
He ignored it and kept his eyes on Miller's back. The lanky detective barreled down the corridor toward the port, stopping occasionally at junctions to peek around the corner and look for trouble. Miller had become a machine. All Holden could do was try to keep up. Always the same distance ahead were the mercenaries who'd been guarding the exit from the casino. When they moved, Miller moved. When they slowed down, he slowed. They were clearing a path to the port, but if they thought that any of the citizens were getting too close, they'd probably open fire. They were definitely shooting anyone they ran into along the way. They'd already shot two people who'd run at them. Both had been vomiting brown goo. Where the hell did those vomit zombies come from so fast? Where the hell did those vomit zombies come from so fast? He said to Miller's back. The detective shrugged with his left hand, his right still clutching his pistol. I don't think enough of that crap came out of Julie to infect the whole station, he replied without slowing down. I'm guessing they were the first batch, the ones they incubated to get enough goo to infect the shelters with. That made sense. And when the controlled portion of the experiment went to shit, you just turned them loose on the populace. By the time people figured out what was going on, half of them were infected already. Then, it was just a matter of time. They paused briefly at a corridor intersection, watching as the leader of the Merc group stopped 100 meters ahead and talked on his radio for a minute. Holden was gasping and trying to catch his breath when the group started up again, and Miller moved to follow. He reached out and grabbed the detective's belt and let Miller drag him along. Where did the skinny belter keep this reserve of energy? The detective stopped. His expression was blank.
They're arguing, Miller said.
Huh?
The leader of that group and some of the men arguing about something, Miller replied.
So? Holden asked, then coughed something wet into his hand. He wiped it off on the back of his pants, not looking to see if it was blood.
Please, don't let it be blood.
Miller shrugged with his hand again.
I don't think everyone's on the same team here, he said.
The Merc group turned down another corridor, and Miller followed, yanking Holden along behind him. These were the outer levels, filled with warehouse space and ship repair and resupply depots. They didn't see a lot of foot traffic at the best of times. Now, the corridor echoed like a mausoleum with their footsteps. Up ahead, the Merc group turned again, and before Miller and Holden could reach the junction, a lone figure wandered into view. He didn't appear to be armed, so Miller moved toward him, cautiously, impatiently reaching behind himself and pulling Holden's hand off his belt. Once he was free, Miller held up his left hand in an unmistakably cop-like gesture.
This is a dangerous place to be wandering around, sir, he said.
The man was now less than 15 meters ahead of them and began moving toward them at a lurch. He was dressed for a party, in a cheap tuxedo with a frilly shirt and sparkly red bow tie. He was wearing one shiny black shoe, the other foot covered with only a red sock. Brown vomit trickled from the corners of his mouth and stained the front of his white shirt.
Shit, Miller said, and brought up his gun.
Holden grabbed his arm and yanked it back down. He's innocent in this, Holden said, the sight of the injured and infected man making his eyes burn.
He's innocent.
He's still coming, Miller said.
So walk faster, Holden said. And if you shoot anyone else and I haven't given you permission to, you don't get to ride on my ship. Got me?
Trust me, Miller said. Dying is the best thing that could happen to that guy today. You're not doing him any favors.
You don't get to decide that,
Holden replied, his tone edging into real anger. Miller started to reply, but Holden held up one hand and cut him off.
You want on the Rossi? I'm the boss then. No questions, no bullshit.
Miller's smirk turned into a smile.
Yes, sir, he said. Our mercs are getting ahead of us.
He pointed down the corridor.
Miller nodded and moved off again at his steady, machine-like pace. Holden didn't turn around, but he could hear the man Miller had almost shot crying in the corridor behind them for a long time. To cover up the sound, which probably existed only in his head once they'd made a couple more turns in the corridor, he began humming the theme to Misko and Marisco again. Mother Elise, who'd been the one to stay at home with him when he was very young, had always brought him something to eat while he watched, and then sat by him with her hand on his head, playing with his hair. She'd laughed at the dinosaur antics even harder than he had. One Halloween, she'd made him a big pink hat to wear so that he could be the evil Count Mungo. Why had that guy been trying to capture the dinosaurs anyway? It had never really been clear. Maybe he just liked dinosaurs. One time he'd used a shrink ray and Holden slammed into Miller's back. The detective had stopped suddenly and now moved quickly to one side of the corridor, crouching low to keep himself in the shadows. Holden followed suit. About 30 meters ahead, the mercenary group had gotten much bigger and had split into two factions.
Yep, Miller said. Whole lot of people having really bad days today.
Holden nodded and wiped something wet off his face. It was blood. He didn't think he'd hit Miller's back hard enough to bloody his nose, and he had a suspicion it wasn't going to stop on its own. Mucous membranes getting fragile. Wasn't that part of radiation burning? He tore strips off his shirt and stuffed them up his nostrils while he watched the scene at the end of the corridor. There were two clear groups, and they did seem to be engaged in some sort of heated argument. Normally, that would have been fine. Holden didn't care about the social lives of mercenaries. But these mercenaries, numbered by this time close to 100, were heavily armed and blocked the corridor that led to his ship. That made their argument worth watching.
Not everyone from Protogen left, I think, Miller said quietly, pointing at one of the two groups. Those guys on the right don't look like the home team.
Holden looked at the group and nodded. They were definitely the more professional-looking soldiers. Their armor fit well. The other group looked like it was largely made up of guys dressed in police riot gear, with only a few men in combat armor.
Want to guess what the argument is about? Miller asked.
Hey, can we have a ride too?
Holden said, mockingly, with a serious accent.
No, we need you guys to stay here and, keep an eye on things, which we promise will be totally safe and absolutely not involve you turning into vomit zombies.
He actually got a chuckle from Miller. And then, the corridor erupted in a barrage of gunfire. Both sides of the discussion were firing automatic weapons at each other from point-blank range. The noise was deafening. Men screamed and flew apart, spraying the corridor and each other with blood and body parts. Holden dropped flat to the floor, but continued watching the firefight. After the initial barrage, the survivors from both groups began falling back in opposite directions, still firing as they moved. The floor at the corridor junction was littered with bodies. Holden estimated that 20 or more men had died in that first second of the fight. The sounds of gunfire grew more distant as the two groups fired at each other down the corridor. In the middle of the junction, one of the bodies on the floor suddenly stirred and raised its head. Even before the wounded man could get to his feet, a bullet hole appeared in the middle of his face shield, and he dropped back to the floor with limp finality.
Where's your ship? Miller asked.
The lift is at the end of this corridor, Holden replied.
Miller spat what looked like bloody phlegm on the floor. And the corridor that crosses it is now a war zone, with armed camps sniping at each other from both sides, he said. I guess we could try just running through it.
Is there another option? Holden asked.
Miller looked at his terminal. We're 53 minutes past the deadline Naomi set, he said. How much more time do you want to waste?
Look, I was never particularly good at math, Holden said, but I'd guess there are as many as 40 guys in either direction down that other corridor. A corridor which is a good 3, maybe 3.5 meters wide, which means that we give 80 guys 3 meters worth of shots at us. Even dumb luck means we get hit a lot and then die. Let's think of a plan B.
As if to underline his argument, another fusillade broke out in the cross corridor, gouging chunks out of the rubbery wall insulation and chewing up the bodies lying on the floor.
They're still withdrawing, Miller said. Those shots came from farther away. I guess we can just wait them out. I mean, if we can.
The rags Holden had stuffed up his nose hadn't stopped the bleeding. They had just dammed it up. He could feel a steady trickle down the back of his throat that made his stomach heave with nausea. Miller was right. They were getting down to the last of their ability to wait anyone out at this point.
God damn, I wish we could call and see if Naomi is even there, Holden said, looking at the flashing network not available on his terminal.
Shh,
Miller whispered, putting one finger on his lips. He pointed back down the corridor in the direction they'd come. And now, Holden could hear heavy footsteps approaching.
Late guests to the party, Miller said, and Holden nodded.
The two men swiveled around, pointing their guns down the corridor and waiting. A group of 4 men in police riot armor rounded the corner. They didn't have their guns out, and 2 of them had their helmets off. Apparently, they hadn't heard about the new hostilities. Holden waited for Miller to fire, and, when he didn't, turned to look at him. Miller was staring back.
I didn't dress real warm, Miller said, almost apologetically.
It took Holden half a second to understand what he meant. Holden gave him permission by shooting first. He targeted one of the mafia thugs without a helmet and shot him in the face, then continued firing at the group until his gun slide locked open when the magazine was empty. Miller had begun firing a split second after Holden's first shot and also fired until his gun was empty. When it was over, all 4 thugs were lying face down in the corridor. Holden let out a long breath that turned into a sigh, and sat down on the floor. Miller walked to the fallen men, and nudged each one in turn with his foot as he replaced the magazine in his gun. Holden didn't bother reloading his. He was done with gunfights. He put the empty pistol in his pocket and got up to join the cop. He bent down and began unbuckling the least damaged armor he could find. Miller raised an eyebrow, but didn't move to help.
We're making a run for it, Holden said, swallowing back the vomit and blood taste in his throat as he pulled the chest and back armor free of the first man. But maybe if we wear this stuff, it will help.
Might, Miller said with a nod, then knelt down to help strip a second man.
Holden put on the dead man's armor, working hard to believe that the pink trail down the back was absolutely not part of the man's brain. Undoing the straps was exhausting. His fingers felt numb and awkward. He picked up the thigh armor, then put it down again. He'd rather run fast. Miller had finished buckling his on too and picked up one of the undamaged helmets. Holden found one with just a dent in it and slipped it onto his head. It felt greasy inside, and he was glad he had no sense of smell. He suspected that its previous occupant hadn't bathed often.
Miller fiddled with the side of his helmet until the radio came on. The cop's voice was echoed a split second later over the helmet's tinny speakers as he said,
Hey, we're coming out into the corridor. Don't shoot. We're coming to join up.
Thumbing off the mic, he turned to Holden and said,
Well, maybe one side won't be shooting at us now.
They moved back down the corridor and stopped 10 meters from the intersection. Holden counted down from three and then took off at the best run he could manage. It was dishearteningly slow. His legs felt like they were filled with lead, like he was running in a pool of water, like he was in a nightmare. He could hear Miller just behind him, his shoes slapping on the concrete floor, his breath coming in ragged gasps. Then he heard only the sound of gunfire. He couldn't tell if Miller's plan had worked. Couldn't tell which direction the gunfire was coming from. It was constant and deafening, and started the instant he entered the cross corridor. When he was 3 meters from the other side, he lowered his head and jumped forward. In Eros's light gravity, he seemed to fly. And he was nearly to the other side when a burst of bullets caught him in the armor over his ribs and slammed him into the corridor wall with a spine-jarring crack. He dragged himself the rest of the way as bullets continued to hit all around his legs, one of them passing through the meaty part of his calf. Miller tripped over him, flying a few feet farther down the hall and then collapsing in a heap. Holden crawled to his side.
Still alive?
Miller nodded.
Got shot. Arms broke. Keep moving,
he gasped out. Holden climbed to his feet, his left leg feeling like it was on fire as the muscle in his calf clenched around his gaping wound. He pulled Miller up and then leaned on him as they limped toward the elevator. Miller's left arm was dangling boneless at his side, and blood was pouring off his hand. Holden punched the button to call the lift, and he and Miller leaned on each other while they waited. He hummed the Misko and Marisco theme to himself, and, after a few seconds, Miller started too. Holden punched the button for the Rocinante's berth, and waited for the elevator to stop at a blank, gray airlock door with no ship beyond it. That would be when he finally had permission to lie down on the floor and die. He looked forward to that moment, when his exertions could end, with a relief that would have surprised him if he'd still been capable of surprise. Miller let go of him and slid down the lift wall, leaving a blood trail on the shiny metal and ending in a pile on the floor. The man's eyes were closed. He could almost have been sleeping. Holden watched the detective's chest rise and fall in ragged, painful breaths that grew smoother and more shallow. Holden envied him. But he had to see that closed airlock door before he could lie down. He began to feel faintly angry with the elevator for taking so long. It stopped, lift doors sliding open with a cheerful ding. Amos stood in the airlock on the other side, an assault rifle in each hand, and two belts of magazines for the rifles slung on his shoulders. He looked Holden up and down once, then glanced over to Miller and back again.
Jesus, Captain, you look like shit.
Chapter 32. Miller. Miller's mind reassembled slowly and with several false starts. In his dreams, he was fitting a puzzle together as the pieces kept changing shape. And each time, just as he was on the verge of slipping the whole mechanism together, the dream began again. The first thing he became aware of was the ache at the small of his back, then the heaviness of his arms and legs, then the nausea. The nearer he came to consciousness, the more he tried to postpone it.
Imaginary fingers tried to complete the puzzle. And before he could make it all fit, his eyes opened. He couldn't move his head. Something was in his neck, a thick bundle of black tubes reaching out of him and up past the limits of his vision. He tried to lift his arms, to push the invading vampiric thing away, but he couldn't. "It got me," he thought with a thrill of fear. "I'm infected." The woman appeared from his left. He was surprised she wasn't Julie. Deep brown skin, dark eyes with just a hint of an epicanthic fold. She smiled at him, black hair draped down the side of her face. Down. There was a down. There was gravity. They were under thrust. That seemed very important, but he didn't know why. "Hey, detective," Naomi said. "Welcome back." "Where am I?" he tried to say. His throat felt solid, crowded like too many people in a tube station. "Don't try to get up or talk or anything," she said. "You've been under for about 36 hours. Good news is we have a sick bay with a military-grade expert system and supplies for 15 Martian soldiers. I think we've burned half of what we've got on you and the captain." The captain, Holden. That was right. They'd been in a fight. There had been a corridor and people shooting. And someone had been sick. He remembered a woman, covered in brown vomit with vacant eyes, but he didn't know whether it was part of a nightmare. Naomi was still talking, something about full plasma flushes and cell damage. He tried to lift a hand, to reach out to her, but a strap restrained him. The ache in his back was his kidneys, and he wondered what exactly was getting filtered out of his blood. Miller closed his eyes, asleep before he could decide whether to rest. No dreams troubled him this time. He roused again when something deep in his throat shifted, pulled at his larynx, and retreated. Without opening his eyes, he rolled to his side, coughed, puked, and rolled back. When he woke, he was breathing on his own. His throat felt sore and abused, but his hands weren't tied down. Drainage tubes ran out of his belly and side, and there was a catheter the size of a pencil coming out his penis. Nothing particularly hurt, so he had to assume he was on pretty nearly all the narcotics there were. His clothes were gone, his modesty preserved only by a thin paper gown and a cast that held his left arm stony and immovable. Someone had put his hat on the next bed over. The sick bay, now that he could see it, looked like a ward on a high-production entertainment feed. It wasn't a hospital. It was the matte black and silver idea of what a hospital was supposed to be. The monitors hung suspended in the air on complex armatures, reporting his blood pressure, nucleic acid concentrations, oxygenation, fluid balance. There were two separate countdowns running, one to the next round of autophagics, the other for pain medication. And across the aisle, at another station, Holden's statistics looked more or less the same. Holden looked like a ghost. His skin was pale and his sclera were red with 100 little hemorrhages. His face was puffy from steroids.
"Hey," Miller said.
Holden lifted a hand, waving gently.
"We made it," Miller said.
His voice sounded like it had been dragged down an alley by its ankles.
"Yeah," Holden said.
"That was ugly."
"Yeah."
Miller nodded. That had taken all the energy he had. He lay back down and fell, if not asleep, at least unconscious. Just before his mind flickered back into forgetfulness, he smiled.
He'd made it. He was on Holden's ship. And they were going to find whatever Julie had left behind for them. Voices woke him. Maybe you shouldn't then. It was the woman, Naomi. Part of Miller cursed her for disturbing him, but there was a buzz in her voice. Not fear or anger, but close enough to be interesting. He didn't move. Didn't even swim all the way back to awareness. But he listened.
I need to, Holden said. He sounded phlegmy, like someone who needed to cough. What happened on Eros, it's put a lot of things in perspective. I've been holding something back.
Captain, no, hear me out. When I was in there, thinking that all I was going to have left was half an hour of rigged pachinko games and then death, when that happened, I knew what my regrets were. You know? I felt all the things that I'd wished I'd done and never had the courage for. Now that I know, I can't just ignore it. I can't pretend it isn't there.
Captain, Naomi said again, and the buzz in her voice was stronger.
Don't say it, you poor bastard, Miller thought.
I'm in love with you, Naomi, Holden said.
The pause lasted no longer than a heartbeat.
No, sir, she said. You aren't.
I am. I know what you're thinking. I've been through this big, traumatic experience, and I'm doing the whole thing where I want to affirm life and make connections, and maybe some of that's part of it. But you have to believe that I know what I feel. And when I was down there, I knew that the thing I wanted the most was to get back to you.
Captain, how long have we served together?
What?
I don't know exactly.
Ballpark estimate?
8.5 runs makes it almost 5 years, Holden said.
Miller could hear the confusion in his voice. All right. And in that time, how many of the crew did you share bunks with?
Does it matter?
Only a little.
A few?
More than a dozen?
No, he said. But he didn't sound sure.
Let's call it 10, Naomi said.
Okay, but this is different. I'm not talking about having a little shipboard romance to pass the time. Ever since...
Miller imagined the woman holding up her hand, or taking Holden's, or maybe just glaring at him. Something to stop the flow of words.
And do you know when I fell for you, sir?
Sorrow. That was what the strain in her voice was. Sorrow. Disappointment. Regret.
When you...
I can tell you the day, Naomi said.
You were about 7 weeks into that first run.
I was still smarting that some Earther had come in from out of the ecliptic and taken my XO job. I didn't like you much right at the start. You were too charming, too pretty, and too damn comfortable in my chair. But there was a poker game in the engine room. You and me and those two Luna boys out of engineering, and Kamala Trask. You remember Trask?
She was the Comtech, the one who was built like a refrigerator, face like a bulldog puppy.
I remember her.
She had the biggest crush on you. Used to cry herself to sleep at night all through that run.
She wasn't in that game because she cared about poker. She just wanted to breathe some of your air, and everyone knew it, even you. And all that night I watched you and her, and you never once led her along. You never gave her any reason to think she had a chance with you. And you still treated her with respect. That was the first time I thought you might be a decent XO. And it was the first time I wished that I could be the girl in your bunk at shift's end.
Because of Trask?
That, and you've got a great ass, sir. My point is, we flew together for 4 years and more. And I would have come along with you any day of that,
if you'd asked me.
I didn't know, Holden said.
He sounded a little strangled. You didn't ask. You always had your sights set someplace else. And honestly, I think Belter women just put you off. Until it was just the five of us. I've seen you looking at me. I know exactly what those looks mean, because I spent 4 years on the other side of them. But I only got your attention when I was the only female on board. And that's not good enough for me. I don't know. No, sir. You don't. That's my point. I've watched you seduce a lot of women, and I know how you do it. You get fixed on her. You get excited by her. Then you convince yourself that the two of you have some kind of special connection, and by the time you believe it, she usually thinks it's true, too. And then you sleep together for a while, and the connection gets a little faded. One or the other of you says something like professional or appropriate boundaries or starts worrying what the crew will think, and the whole thing slides away. Afterwards, they still like you, all of them. You do it so well, they don't even feel like they get to hate you for it. That's not true.
It is.
And until you figure out that you don't have to love everyone you bed down with, I'm never going to know whether you love me or just want to bed down. And I won't sleep with you until you know which it is. The smart money isn't on love. I was just, if you want to sleep with me, Naomi said, be honest. Respect me enough for that. Okay? Miller coughed. He hadn't meant to. Hadn't even been aware he was going to. His belly went tight, his throat clamped down, and he coughed wet and deep. Once he started, it was hard to stop. He sat up, eyes watering from the effort. Holden was lying back on his bed. Naomi sat on the next bed over, smiling like there had been nothing to overhear. Holden's monitors showed an elevated heart rate and blood pressure. Miller could only hope the poor bastard hadn't gotten an erection with the catheters still in. Hey, detective, Naomi said. How are you feeling? Miller nodded.
I felt worse, he said. Then a moment later, no, I haven't. But I'm all right. How bad was it?
You're both dead, Naomi said. Seriously, we had to override the triage filters on both of you more than once. The expert system kept clicking you over into hospice care and shooting you full of morphine. She said it lightly, but he believed her. He tried to sit up. His body still felt terribly heavy, but he didn't know if it was from weakness or the ship thrust. Holden was quiet, jaw clamped tight. Miller pretended not to notice.
Long-term estimates?
You're both going to need to be checked for new cancers every month for the rest of your lives. The captain has a new implant where his thyroid used to be, since his real one was pretty much cooked down. We had to take about a foot and a half of your small bowel that wouldn't stop bleeding. You're both going to bruise easy for a while. And if you wanted kids, I hope you have sperm in a bank someplace, because all your little soldiers have two heads now. Miller chuckled. His monitors blinked into alarm mode and then back out.
You sound like you trained as a med tech, he said.
Nope, engineer. But I've been reading the printouts every day, so I've got the lingo down. I wish Shed was still here, she said, and sounded sad for the first time. That was the second time someone had mentioned Shed. There was a story there, but Miller let it drop.
Hair going to fall out?
He asked. Maybe, Naomi said. The system shot you full of the drugs that are supposed to stop that, but if the follicles die, they die.
Well, good thing I've still got my hat. What about Eros?
Naomi's false, light tone failed her.
It's dead, Holden said from his bed, turning to look at Miller.
I think we were the last ship out. The station isn't answering calls, and all the automatic systems have it in a quarantine lockdown.
Rescue ships? Miller asked and coughed again. His throat was still sore.
Not going to happen, Naomi said. There were 1.5 million people on station. No one has the resources to put into that kind of rescue op.
After all, Holden said, there's a war on.
The ship system dimmed the lights for night. Miller lay on his bed. The expert system had shifted his treatment regimen into a new phase, and for the past 3 hours he'd alternated between spiking fevers and teeth-chattering chills. His teeth and the nail beds of his fingers and toes ached. Sleep wasn't an option, so he lay in the gloom and tried to pull himself together. He wondered what his old partners would have made of his behavior on Eros, Havelock, Mus. He tried to imagine them in his place. He'd killed people, and he'd done it cold. Eros had been a kill box, and when the people in charge of the law wanted you dead, the law didn't apply anymore. And some of the dead assholes had been the ones who'd killed Julie. So, revenge killing. Was he really down to revenge killing? That was a sad thought. He tried to imagine Julie sitting beside him the way Naomi had with Holden. It was like she'd been waiting for the invitation. Julie Mao, who he'd never really known. She raised a hand in greeting.
And what about us?
He asked her as he looked into her dark, unreal eyes.
Do I love you? Or do I just want to love you so bad I can't tell the difference?
Hey, Miller, Holden said, and Julie vanished. You awake?
Yeah, can't sleep.
Me either. They were silent for a moment. The expert system hummed. Miller's left arm itched under its cast as the tissue went through another round of forced regrowth.
You doing okay?
Miller asked.
Why wouldn't I be? Holden said sharply. You killed that guy, Miller said. Back on the station. You shot him. I mean, I know you shot at guys before. Back at the hotel. But right at the end there, you actually hit somebody in the face.
Yeah, I did.
You good with that?
Sure, Holden said too quickly. The air recyclers hummed, and the blood pressure cuff on Miller's good arm squeezed him like a hand. Holden didn't speak, but when Miller squinted, he could see the elevated blood pressure and the uptick in brain activity.
They always made us take time off, Miller said.
What?
When we shot someone. Whether they died or not, they always made us take a leave of absence. Turn in our weapon. Go talk to the head shrinker.
Bureaucrats, Holden said.
They had a point, Miller said. Shooting someone does something to you. Killing someone, that's even worse. Doesn't matter that they had it coming, or you didn't have a choice. Or maybe a little difference. But it doesn't take it away.
Seems like you got over it, though.
Maybe, Miller said. Look, all that I said back there about how you kill someone, about how leaving them alive wasn't doing them any favors, I'm sorry that happened.
You think you were wrong?
I wasn't. But I'm still sorry it happened.
Okay.
Jesus, look, I'm saying it's good that it bothers you. It's good that you can't stop seeing it or hearing it. That part where it haunts you some, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Holden was quiet for a moment. When he spoke again, his voice was gray as stone.
I've killed people before, you know. but they were blips in a radar track.
It's not the same, is it? Miller said.
No, it isn't, Holden replied.
Does this go away?
Sometimes, Miller thought.
No, he said. Not if you've still got a soul.
Okay, thanks.
One other thing?
Yeah?
I know it's none of my business, but I really wouldn't let her put you off. So you don't understand sex and love and women. Just means you were born with a cock. And this girl, Naomi, she seems like she's worth putting a little effort into it. You know?
Yeah, Holden said. Then, can we never talk about that again?
Sure.
The ship creaked, and gravity shifted a degree to Miller's right. Course correction. Nothing interesting. Miller closed his eyes and tried to will himself to sleep. His mind was full of dead men, and Julie, and love, and sex. There was something Holden had said about the war that was important, but he couldn't make the pieces fit. They kept changing. Miller sighed, shifted his weight so that he blocked one of his drainage tubes and had to shift back to stop the alarm. When the blood pressure cuff fired off again, it was Julie holding him, pulling herself so close her lips brushed his ear. His eyes opened, his mind seeing both the imaginary girl and the monitors that she would have blocked if she'd really been there. I love you too, she said, and I will take care of you. He smiled at seeing the numbers change as his heart raced. Chapter 33, Holden. For 5 more days, Holden and Miller lay on their backs in sickbay while the solar system burned down around them. The reports of Eros's death ran from massive ecological collapse brought about by war-related supply shortages to covert Martian attack to secret belt bioweapon laboratory accident. Analysis from the inner planets had it that the OPA and terrorists like them had finally shown how dangerous they could be to innocent civilian populations. The belt blamed Mars, or the maintenance crews of Eros, or the OPA for not stopping it. And then, a group of Martian frigates blockaded Pallas. A revolt on Ganymede ended in 16 dead. And the new government of Ceres announced that all ships with Martian registry docked on the station were being commandeered. The threats and accusations, all set to the constant human background noise of war drums, moved on. Eros had been a tragedy and a crime, but it was finished, and there were new dangers popping up in every corner of human space. Holden turned off his newsfeed, fidgeted in his bunk, and tried to wake Miller up by staring at him. It didn't work. The massive radiation exposure had failed to give him superpowers. Miller began to snore. Holden sat up, testing the gravity. Less than a quarter G. Alex wasn't in a hurry then. Naomi was giving him and Miller time to heal before they arrived at Julie's magical mystery asteroid. Shit. Naomi. The last few times she'd come into sickbay had been awkward. She never brought the subject of his failed romantic gesture back up, but he could feel a barrier between them now that filled him with regret. And every time she left the room, Miller would look away from him and sigh, which just made it worse. But he couldn't avoid her forever, no matter how much he felt like an idiot. He swung his feet off the edge of the bed and pressed down on the floor. His legs felt weak, but not rubbery. The soles of his feet hurt, but quite a bit less than nearly everything else on his body. He stood up,
one hand still on the bed, and tested his balance. He wobbled but remained upright. Two steps reassured him that walking was possible in the light gravity. The IV tugged at his arm. He was down to just one bag of something a faint blue. He had no idea what it was, but after Naomi's description of how close to death he'd come, he figured it must be important. He pulled it off the wall hook and held it in his left hand. The room smelled like antiseptic and diarrhea. He was happy to be leaving.
"Where are you going?" Miller asked, his voice groggy.
"Out." Holden had the sudden visceral memory of being 15.
"Okay,"
Miller said, then rolled onto his side. The sickbay hatch was 4 meters from the central ladder, and Holden covered the ground with a slow, careful shuffle, his paper booties making a whispery, scuffing sound on the fabric-covered metal floor. The ladder itself defeated him. Even though Ops was only one deck up, the 3-meter climb might as well have been 1,000. He pressed the button to call the lift, and a few seconds later, the floor hatch slid open and the lift climbed through with an electric whine. Holden tried to hop on, but managed only a sort of slow-motion fall that ended with his clutching the ladder and kneeling on the lift platform. He stopped the lift, pulled himself upright, and started it again, then rode it up to the next deck in what he hoped was a less beaten and more captain-like pose.
"Jesus, Captain! You still look like shit,"
Amos said as the lift came to a stop. The mechanic was sprawled across 2 chairs at the sensor stations and munching on what looked like a strip of leather.
"You keep saying that. Keeps being true."
"Amos, don't you have work to do?" Naomi said. She was sitting at one of the computer stations watching something flash by on the screen. She didn't look up when Holden came onto the deck. That was a bad sign.
"Nope, most boring ship I ever worked, boss. She don't break, she don't leak. She don't even have any annoying rattle to tighten down,"
Amos replied as he sucked down the last of his snack and smacked his lips.
"There's always mopping,"
Naomi said, then tapped out something on the screen in front of her. Amos looked from her to Holden and back again.
"Oh, that reminds me. I better get down to the engine room and look at that thing I've been meaning to look at,"
Amos said, and jumped to his feet.
"Excuse me, Cap."
He squeezed past Holden, hopped on the lift, and rode it sternward. The deck hatch closed behind him.
"Hey,"
Holden said to Naomi once Amos was gone.
"Hey,"
she said without turning around. That wasn't good either. When she'd sent Amos away, he'd hoped she wanted to talk. It didn't look like it. Holden sighed and shuffled over to the chair next to her. He collapsed into it, his legs tingling like he'd run a kilometer instead of just walking 20-odd steps. Naomi had left her hair down, and it hid her face from him. Holden wanted to brush it back, but was afraid she'd snap his elbow with belter kung fu if he tried.
"Look, Naomi," he started, but she ignored him and hit a button on her panel.
He stopped when Fred's face appeared on the display in front of her.
"Is that Fred?"
he said, because he couldn't think of anything even more idiotic to say.
"You should see this. Got it from Tycho a couple hours ago on the tight beam after I sent them an update on our status."
Naomi tapped the play button, and Fred's face sprang to life.
"Naomi, sounds like you guys have had a tough time of it. The air's full of chatter on the station shutdown and the supposed nuclear explosion. No one knows what to make of it. Keep us informed. In the meantime, we managed to hack open that data cube you left here. I don't think it'll help much, though. Looks like a bunch of sensor data from the Doniger, mostly EM stuff.
We've tried looking for hidden messages, but my smartest people can't find anything. I'm passing the data along to you. Let me know if you find anything. Tycho out. The screen went blank.
What does the data look like? Holden asked.
It's just what the man said, Naomi said. EM sensor data from the Doniger during the pursuit by the six ships and the battle itself. I've dug through raw stuff, looking for anything hidden inside, but for the life of me, I can't find a thing. I've even had the Rossi digging through the data for the last couple hours, looking for patterns. She has really good software for that sort of thing. But so far, nothing. She tapped on the screen again, and the raw data began spooling past faster than Holden could follow. In a small window inside the larger screen, the Rosinante's pattern recognition software worked to find meaning. Holden watched it for a minute, but his eyes quickly unfocused.
Lieutenant Kelly died for this data, he said. He left the ship while his mates were still fighting. Marines don't do that unless it matters.
Naomi shrugged and pointed at the screen with resignation.
That's what was on his cube, she said.
Maybe there's something steganographic, but I don't have another data set to compare it to. Holden began tapping on his thigh, his pain and romantic failures momentarily forgotten.
So, let's say that this data is all that it is. There's nothing hidden. What would this information mean to the Martian Navy?
Naomi leaned back in her chair and closed her eyes in thought, one finger twisting and untwisting a curl of hair by her temple.
It's mostly EM data, so lots of engine signature stuff. Drive radiation is the best way to keep track of other ships, so that tells you where the ships were during the fight.
Tactical data?
Maybe, Holden said. Would that be important enough to send Kelly out with?
Naomi took a deep breath and let it out slowly.
I don't think so, she said.
Me either.
Something tapped at the edge of his conscious mind, asking to be let in.
What was that thing with Amos all about? He said.
Amos?
Him showing up at the airlock with two guns when we arrived, he said. There was some trouble on our trip back to the ship.
Trouble for who? Holden asked.
Naomi actually smiled at that.
Some bad men didn't want us to hack the lockdown on the Rossi. Amos talked it over with them.
You didn't think it was because we were waiting for you, did you, sir?
Was there a smile in her voice? A hint of coyness? Flirtation?
He stopped himself from grinning.
What did the Rossi say about the data when you ran it? Holden asked.
Here, Naomi replied, and hit something on her panel.
The screen began displaying long lists of data in text. Lots of EM and light spectrum stuff. Some leakage from damaged...
Holden yelped.
Naomi looked at him.
I'm such an idiot, Holden said.
Granted. Elaborate?
Holden touched the screen and began scrolling up and down through the data. He tapped one long list of numbers and letters and leaned back with a grin.
There. That's it, he said.
That's what?
Hull structure isn't the only recognition metric. It's the most accurate, but it's also got the shortest range and...
He gestured around him at the Rosinante.
Is the easiest to fool.
The next best method is drive signature.
Can't mask your radiation and heat patterns.
And they're easy to spot even from really far away.
Holden turned on the screen next to his chair and pulled up the ship's friend-foe database, then linked it to the data on Naomi's screen.
That's what this message is, Naomi. It's telling Mars who killed the Doniger by showing them what the drive signature was.
Then, Why not just say so-and-so killed us in a nice, easy-to-read text?